This podcast is in no way affiliated with the Stars production or Diana Gabaldone. All views expressed are solely our own. Welcome to the Outlander podcast,
where the men are kilted, the women are winsome,
and the whiskey is neat. Welcome to episode 377 of the Outlander podcast. I'm Ginger.
And I'm Summer, and we are in love with all things Outlander.
This episode, we'd like to thank co-producer Megan P. And stay tuned to the end of the show to find out what a co-producer is, how you can maybe become one if you so choose. And also, don't forget, we would love more and more of you are joining our text community, and we'd love to have even more of you. You can join us by texting hello, or, you know, pretty much probably anything you want, to 916-659-5112. And we would love to welcome you.
And now on to our read-along. This week, we are continuing our A Breath of Snow and Ashes read-along, beginning with chapter 57, entitled The Minister's Return. And y'all, we're straddling apart this week.
We did it a few weeks ago, and the episode was called, because Roger was involved in the chapter, not in us. Yeah, Roger definitely was not in us.
Roger was
involved in the read-along chapters, and we straddled apart. So we just combined it. I combined it and called that episode Straddling St. Roger. So now we're straddling again. Maybe we'll use straddling again. I have no idea. I had no expectation of that. We shall see if something comes up. Man, there's a lot of like sexual innuendo here. Just at the top of the show. We haven't even gotten into it yet.
That's a you thing.
We get a date. You guys know how I love my dates. September 4th, 1774. Roger's on his way home from the Minister Makers. This is funny. He's happy to be home. He ends up being happy to be home and seeing his family and all that. But he takes, and I'm not dogging on this because I get it. The reason that Diana gives makes sense. But he's happy to be home. And so you think he's excited to be home. And we know from Clarence's actions and whatever, like noises or movements he's making, like Clarence can tell they're near home. And he's like, I want to get, let's go.
Yeah.
But Roger takes the long way around. So I appreciate that as some, you know, as like kind of coming down from this, not a mountain, but kind of easing your way back into quote unquote real life, right? You've just spent this amount of time in your rapture. Let's not kid ourselves. He is and was and always will be. Not that he won't have other responsibilities like he does now. But Roger was an academic first and foremost before he was ever with Brianna, before he was ever a father, and before he was a minister, or at this point of ish being a minister ish. So Roger, yes, he loves his family. He loves Roger. He loves Bree. He loves Jem. He wants to serve his community, right? But let's not forget that Roger, well, yes, he needed to go through this and be kind of, maybe not catechized. They made sure he was well catechized. They wanted to make sure that he was in agreement, in alignment with the teachings of not just Christianity, but specifically Presbyterianism or the Presbyterian. They're not codes, but I don't know if it's a code or a constitution. They do have like a statement of faith, right? So he was being tested, not his faith necessarily being tested, but they were wanting to see if he would be a good fit. And he, you know, mutually, he could decide if he wasn't a good fit. So part of him being up there was a lot of probably mentally bringing him back to his days at university, because he had knowledge of the Greek and the Latin, of course, English. And so he had a lot of it. He had a lot of knowledge and ability that was already done. Like he had a big old head start on someone who out of the blue decided they wanted to become a minister with none of his training. So all that to say, I get taking the long way around it may not reflect wanting to be with your family. And we don't know. This long way around could have literally added 30 minutes. So it's not.
But isn't it awful? Awful. Awful's not their word. Isn't it also, I didn't mean awful. Isn't it also it's kind awful. Of metaphoric for him taking the long route to becoming a minister?
Oh, gosh. That's funny. I didn't think about it. I was thinking of him coming home. But yeah.
Because that's not a quick trip. Like most people don't. Most people. No, I'm just saying most people don't go into academia, then to other things, and then to decide.
And then time travel.
Right.
And then go to the 18th.
Most people don't. You're right. Most people don't time
they
travel.
They don't. Most I think don't. Everyone can agree with this.
Yeah. Yeah. Most people don't time travel. Nope. But that was not part of the long journey I was referring to when I was calling it more of a metaphorical long way home. But yeah. And also I think it's like reintroducing yourself to or re-preparing yourself for the new reality. Because when you go off to do studying and things like that, it's a very me-centric time of your life.
Even if it's not me-centric, yes, I get what you're saying, but it's very intellectual. And intellectual things, by definition, are, I wouldn't say selfish necessarily. They can be selfish or they can make someone selfish even if they don't mean to be. But it is very, it's in one's own head. It is very singular, right? It is very... Yeah, you may have discourse with other people to discuss this stuff. But if you're studying like that, you can absolutely study in a group, right? You can have activities. Roger, I don't think Roger was studying in a group. I'm sure his discourse with other ministers helped him. Absolutely. But yeah, whenever you do anything, I wouldn't say all academic, but anything intellectual is almost by definition a one man or one woman show. To a certain point, right? Until you created whatever product, your writing, your theory, whatever that is, and you have something to share that people can read or people can hear, then there can be discourse about the thing, and that then involves other people. But you're absolutely right. It's kind of him. It's kind of a one-man show as far as his development. Because even though he's talking to other ministers, right? And he's being tested is not the right word. I can't think of the word. It hopefully will come to me before we are done. But he's being quote unquote tested. That's not what I mean. But that's
I mean, even when you study in groups, the actual learning of the knowledge is your responsibility, and it's something that someone can be with you while you're doing it. But if you're not doing it,
you won't benefit.
It doesn't work, right? So it's a very solitary. While it can be group activities, it is still a very solitary decision to go, you know, around.
Yes. And so this also reminded me, not when I read it and took notes, but from something you said a little bit ago, it reminded me of, I mean, it's completely different. I mean, it's different in its own way. Although I guess I see parallels. So if you remember in Dragonfly and Amber, no, sorry. I got ahead of myself. In Voyager, when we learn about Jamie post-Culloden, right? Before post-Culloden.
I don't know what I thought you were going to say, but it sounded like it was going to be post-coital, but then it wasn't.
No. Jamie post... Stop it.
See?
That's your fault. Jamie post-Culloden, pre-Ardsmuir. Like, that's a phrase. For that chunk of 7 years, he was the Dunbonnet, right? And when he was the Dunbonnet living in that cave, if I remember correctly, he came down to the house to Lallybroch like once a month, something like that. And he would shave and, you know, be with family and kind of and be more human. But Diana describes his change, right? From feral, part of nature, not calling him pagan, but basically of the natural world, and how that entity, that Jamie, slowly changes and takes on more of the civilized world as he gets closer to Lallybroch. Literally, as he gets closer to Lallybroch, he becomes less of a beast, less of a creature, less of a, I won't say pagan deity, but there's definitely pagan overtones of it on it there. But more, I guess civilized is probably the best way to put it, as he gets to the house. And the like crowning of him, or the completion of him becoming human again, becoming civilized, is actually human. She did say that he was like animal to human, right? There's all kinds of metaphors you can you can take from that. But part of the ritual, or the ritual that like finished it, that completed it, that I think she said he always did. And it wasn't until they finished it, he finished it. They didn't talk. They didn't catch up. They didn't eat until he finished it. And that was, he would shave himself. He shaved his beard. And that was him becoming again human, again civilized. And as on a further offshoot, if I'm not mistaken, and my friends who are classicists or just people who are crazy knowledgeable about the Roman Empire and classical Rome, more knowledgeable than I, which is like easy to say. I know a tiny bit. I don't know a lot of it. If I remember correctly, one of the reasons or one of the things that separated Romans from quote unquote barbarians, right, or quote unquote pagans, was that it was Roman fashion to shave. So all, I'm not calling Jamie a Roman. What I'm saying is it is ingrained within our modern psyche that it's not that beards can't be sexy. Of course they can be. And they're making a comeback now, right? The last few years. But part of dominating nature, part of controlling chaos, part of being civilized, if you will, because the Romans, I mean, they were known, right? You know, Roman civilization is known the world over for a lot of things. But yeah, so I thought of that as well. He is not Roman, but along with that metaphor or that description, whatever, he completed his transformation into a civilized human, a civilized creature by shaving his beard. So basically getting rid of the can't get rid of the stuff in the mind. Yes, his mind would adapt as he walked and as he shaved. But the one thing he could do to change his outward appearance was to shave. So anyhow, yeah. So when I think about that, when you described something, Summer, like the second or third thing you said, it reminded me of Jamie returning from the cave, going to Lallybroch in Voyager when we were learning of Jamie's post-Culloden, Summer, pre-Ardsmuir days. Whew, that was a bit much.
But it's also funny that you mentioned shaving because it's one of the first things Bree says to him
when I know, right?
She sees that's him. Funny. She goes, when did you shave last?
Yeah, that's true. I read the chapter, but I didn't remark on that because, again, I didn't think about the Jamie return thing until you and I were talking just now. So I wouldn't, if I had thought about the Jamie return and thus shaving, I probably would have caught on. Or made a comment about Roger shaving. But yeah, absolutely. There's so many things here that are interesting in and of themselves, even at text level. But if you've read, which most of us have, I think, if you've read the other books before this one, then yeah, you can see, not saying that's what Dinah had in mind, but you can absolutely make parallels, you know, in a lot of places. So while his return is definitely not as dramatic as Jamie's. I mean, come on, it's not. Or as difficult or as big or as dangerous, all of this. It is a transformation, right? He has been transformed, I guess, or he was transformed before he went, meaning his heart was transformed. He wanted to do this. And now he's gone and he's had this experience just shy of being ordained. So he's basically everything but ordination. And so he comes back and he has to learn some Hebrew. And I think they also have to wait till there's like a, not a college, until they have some kind of meeting or event every few years. That's going to be coming up later in the book that they have to wait for, or they tend to wait for. Basically
it's like a session. They have some sort of seminary thing.
Exactly. So they come back, like you can study at seminary anytime. That's kind of what he did, right? He went away, studied with, or chatted up with some ministers who could examine. That's what it was. He was examined, not physically, but that's what it's called when you're asked these types of questions. So he was examined to make sure that he was a good fit and that he had the knowledge, all of that. So so he's not a minister yet. He's pretty much all but he has to wait until they have one of these sessions to be ordained. So yeah, so that's why this happened. Anyway, so yeah, so him going away and coming back, he has been transformed. He's unlike the Jamie transformation. It's not multiple times. And it's also not from feral to, you know, human. But you could say that him purposely taking the long way around, he's, even if it's only half an hour, right? We don't know exactly how long it is. It gives him a little or however much more time to either extend this feeling that he has, this feeling of, you know, newness and hope and excitement about the future and how he's been changed, whatever. And it can do both too. It doesn't have to be one or the other, but it could either be just a way for him to artificially extend this feeling he has, like this walking on cloud nine, or, you know, the surrealness that he's feeling, or it could be to have more time to kind of collect himself and prepare himself to be with his family. Not that he doesn't love them, not that he didn't miss them, nothing like that, but it's definitely a different world where he was, right? Like the academic, he was a student, yes, a scholar, back where he, like, you know, that's kind of his first haunt, right? Growing up, or at least in school, he was an academic first. So it both gives him a way to artificially extend this feeling potentially, and or also to give him a little more time to mentally kind of prepare himself to get himself out of that other mindset and more, and, you know, put on the role of father, husband and father. So neither are bad. Neither are, you know, they're fine. And maybe they both happen. We don't know the reason, but he takes it. And he comes across little Aiden, who is fishing. And little Aiden says, it's so funny. He's like, are you a real minister now? That reminded me of, I know it's not related at all, but it reminded me of Pinocchio saying,
are you a real boy?
Yeah.
Are you a real boy?
Pinocchio
now?
Was the one he was told this to, but I can imagine Pinocchio saying, am I a real boy yet? Am I a real boy yet? And Roger says, almost. So in other words, Roger, the answer is no. Just say no. But almost, yeah. Aiden shows he's so proud. He's so happy to see him. Remember before he left, Aiden is the son of Aiden's mom. I can't remember her name. Mrs. Aiden's mom. Aiden is the son of his mother. And his mother.
Of course he is.
I'm really good at this. Aiden's mother is the widow whom Roger had, bless his heart, been spending a lot of time with. Helping, I mean, maybe some religious stuff involved, like, you know, catechizing, who knows, but a lot of helping with kids, helping with around the house tasks, because her husband had died and she had two young children. So he was helping there, and that's great, but there was starting to be gossip, rumors about him and potentially Aiden's mom having a fling or something. And so when we find out, if you remember a few chapters back, and we find out when Roger tells Bree that, you know, I think I have this calling and I just want to help. And Bree feels it kind of comes out of a spat, right? Because he has not explained himself to her. And I know his feelings are developing, so he doesn't necessarily have the final word on him at that time or know what it is. Or maybe he's wrestling with that calling because he doesn't know if he's just trying to discern. And all she sees is he's gone all the time. And now, which is one thing. And then finally, when the rumors and gossip starts, she's like, not doing this. So when they kind of have that tête-à-tête, she is very upset and sad and scared. And he, I don't know if he's kind of oblivious. He's like, what? You think I would do that? Okay, fine. So he's a little bit, he's oblivious. But I think it comes out of the fact that he's there out of this, his need, his urge, his calling to help, to pastor in his own way. And so when it kind of clicks and he tells her, look, I think I had this calling. She's like, oh, okay. Like I can deal with this. I can't compete with God, but I understand that if you, you know, if you need this or if you feel this and that's the reason you're helping these people. Okay. You know, it definitely helps
limitations.
Oh my gosh. Yes. She still has absolutely a right to judge like how much he's not with them. Like he still needs to be present. However, it's a much better explanation for, especially going forward, for him not spending time there, and would help with any kind of rumors or gossip. Something I've long loved is learning languages and travel. While I began learning my first foreign language at 14, I'm always looking for more opportunities to widen my knowledge base and, of course, do more travel. Enter Michelle Thomas, an app-based program for learning a new language.
The Michelle Thomas method fits seamlessly into any schedule. Thanks to its audio-only formatting, you can listen as you work from home, on your return to office commute, on the flight for your post-pandemic vacation, or curled up on your couch. Michelle Thomas is your ideal companion for learning a new language because it's stress-free, works with how your brain naturally learns, and lets you relax or multitask while learning a new language so fast you'll surprise yourself.
Stay motivated as you start to speak and form your own sentences immediately. You'll be delighted by your progress and eager to continue. The method's creator, Michelle Thomas, broke down entire languages into logical chunks or building blocks. As a learner, you're presented these building blocks in a logical order and slowly build up the complexity, helping you to say what you want when you want.
Because you can listen on your phone or computer, your language course can be played anytime, anywhere, meaning you no longer have to carve out time to learn a language, stick your nose in a workbook, or attend a class. You can simply press play wherever you are in your daily routine and continue making progress.
There are 17 languages offered in the foundation courses, including Modern Standard Arabic, Dutch, Italian, Mandarin, and Swedish. Beginners start out with a foundation of verbs as they listen to a teacher and two students. For more advanced language speakers, there are intermediate, language builder, vocabulary, and insiders courses offered on select languages.
So why choose Michelle Thomas? Backed by science and based on principles of instructional psychology, the Michelle Thomas method works with how the brain naturally learns by organizing information in a way the brain prefers and can retain. As Michelle Thomas himself says, what you understand, you know, and what you know, you don't forget.
Start your language journey with 25% off at www.michellethomas.com. That's michellethomas.com. Simply use discount code TOP, T-O-P, at checkout to claim 25% off any Michelle Thomas course.
Visit michellethomas.com, select your desired language and course level, and use discount code TOP at checkout to claim 25% off your purchase. Not redeemable on bundles.
The Michelle Thomas method. Learn a language for good. So, yeah, so they have all that conversation. And so he's not yet a minister. But Aiden is this child, as I said, the daughter of, oh my God, Aiden's a daughter now. Aiden is the son of the widow whom Roger spent a lot of time with before he went off to try to become a minister. Aiden is so proud. Aiden is so proud of his appendectomy scar. It is so cute. He's like, look, Roger, look. Or Mr. Roger, whatever he calls him.
Won't you be my neighbor?
Right? They already are neighbors, just faraway neighbors. Roger's happy to be home and also heartened that people were waiting for him. And Aiden, how do we know this? Aiden tells him that we find out it's a Mrs. Ogilvy who had had a new baby, and she wants her baby to be baptized. And so she had asked Aiden to be sure to let her know as soon as he saw Mr. Rogers. I'm going to say that now. That makes me happy. Megan P. writes, as it usually is on the ridge, immediately Anita rises and off Pastor Roger goes to christen his first baby.
Anita rises. And I was like, who's Anita?
And when did she die?
Where did she come from?
Oh, Lord. I believe the needs that will pop up for him will keep him feeling useful and productive on the ridge, and it will be a great thing for him. Yeah, okay. It's at the end. When Bree sees him, she comes running up to him, and she's so happy to see him, and she brings him up to date with the happenings of the ridge. And, of course, that includes all about Donner. And of course, the gathering.
And
all of it. Exactly. Ian and the Civ.
The whores,
Mrs. Sylvie, Jocasta and her burst eyeball, like everything. She's like word vomit.
We put a needle in her eye.
Yes. And he sees that Brianna? I've never said that before. He sees that. I almost did it again.
You did.
He sees that Brianna has made strides with the kiln and its products. And he sees clay pipes. he's, and they're both excited. And yeah, so remember, there was a conversation, it may have started in, I think it started in book five, but there was a conversation about bringing water up to the homes, or at least one of the homes to start with. And they talked about metal, and it was just like, oh yeah, there's no way, metal would cost way too much. But they have plenty of clay, plenty of dirt and clay and water. And if she could build a kiln, there's a chance that she could build these clay pipes. And she has. She started. So that's an update there. Megan P. writes, I thought it was very cute how excited Bree is to have her guy back, and her support of him is something that I'm sure he's grateful for as he starts this new role. It's good that he feels like he has found his niche in the 1700s. So Roger tells her more about his time with the Presbyterians. He's now what's known as a minister of the word. And this always makes me giggle when I read it. He can preach, teach, and bury. He can't administer sacraments, but he can preach, teach, and bury. And he's very happy with this. And she's happy for him, but also a little wary of him with his new calling, wanting him to remember that he married her first. And he's like, always, 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 I will not forget that. And then they're called off. He's called off so he can potentially christen or baptize a baby if there's a need. This is Aiden came up to grab him and said, the baby's taken, you know, the baby's not well. And Mrs. Ogilvie says, come now. So he's off. So when he gets there, the parents, we find out, look both about 15. It's just like breaks my brain.
Babies, they were making babies.
They were first time parents. But he says the baby was all right. And actually, okay, I said this earlier. I just wasn't fully clear in it. Bree to go with him. So Bree's there helping with the baby and saying, oh, he's fine. He just had, I think maybe just had a little bit of colic, but baby was all right.
She didn't want to miss his first showing as a minister, his first official. She's like, no, of course I'm going to be there.
I'm going to be at that show. I have front row seats.
I'm going to judge the hell out of you.
Oh my goodness. And the best part of this chapter is the name.
Oh God.
That those two 15-year-old parents,
they don't know, no
gave
matter.
To their baby. Do you want to tell us, like, Summer?
That's like, this reminds me of all the horror stories of people who don't know what to name their kid before they go to the hospital. And they end up naming it, after some word that they've heard at the hospital. And that's why you end up with babies named like chlamydia.
Oh,
and
Lord.
Other things like that. But yeah, apparently they were so impressed by Mr. Roger that they named their baby Rogerina. Rogerina. Oh,
gracious. God bless that baby.
Not cute. That baby better be handsome. She better be real pretty. Because you can't live that name down.
Like Brianna said, you can only really save it by calling her Ina. There's like, or even Rena. Rena is pretty, but no other part of that is pretty. Megan P. writes, as it usually is on the ridge, immediately a need arises and off Pastor Roger goes to christen his first baby. I almost said to...
To what?
I almost flipped the F and the CH. So to fisten his cursed baby.
Oh, that sounded like fisting, and that's not what
I know.
He did.
That's what he said. It's
that's
not good.
That's not what he did.
No, he did. Totally didn't.
That's not what he did.
He not even a thought.
I mean, of all of the things
Megan.
He's ordained to do now, that is not one of them. I don't think anyone is officially ordained into that.
Whoa. Megan P. continues. I apologize for butchering that, Megan. Megan P. continues. I believe the needs that will pop up for him will keep him feeling useful and productive on the ridge, and that will be a great thing for him. I do hope that more wee Rogerinas don't pop up around the ridge, though. I'm pretty sure one is more than enough.
Yes. God, could you imagine the run
Rogerina of one, Rogerina two? No, I can't God imagine. Lord. I don't need to. I'm good.
They could have a La Roger.
Oh.
Think of all the different incarnations of Roger that they could end up with on the ridge.
Rogerina, Rogera, Roger. Oh, the French contingent with
Rigette.
Rogette.
Rogette.
Rogus.
Rogue. What?
That caught you off guard.
I was like, that's, I don't even know where that one came from. I was like, what?
You Roger. Oh, Roger. Roger.
Roger.
I don't know. What is Roger backwards? Rhaegar? Yeah. Rhaegor. Actually, Rhaegor is not bad. Sounds a little...
It reminds me of a Game of Thrones name.
It does.
Or a Viking. Ragnar.
I think we've done this on the show before. Like, it probably was like 6 or 7 or many years ago. But when we were younger, I don't know know if it wasn't a fad or anything, but when, and I'm talking like junior high or younger, Summer and I both have, like I'm sure most kids have at some point, tried to see what their name sounded like backwards. And mine's really not wonderful. It's, I mean, I can do a soft G, but I don't know if it make it better. No, I have two G's.
Isn't
Lord.
Isn't it Regnan?
If it's a final G, it's not going to be soft. So anyway, according to the law of English pronunciation or the pronunciation rules of English, okay? Regnig.
Mm-hmm.
And Summers is...
Remus.
Remus. I mean, that sound, that's very Roman.
I mean, sure.
I don't know if it's Remus. M. Sorry, I think it's Remus because it's double M's. I mean, you could choose how to pronounce it, but usually double M makes a short vowel sound and not a long vowel sound of the vowel that comes before it. But yeah, I'm not a fan of Regnig at all or Rogus. But so Megan P. also signs us out with, so this chapter finds a chipper Roger coming back a baby pastor. Every pastor I've ever known.
He's only a pastor for babies, not for adults. He's Summer. Only ordained for babies.
Stop it. Every pastor I've already known. Like, are you sleeping with them?
What's wrong with you?
I'm sorry, Megan. I'm really mad.
You're not allowed to do this anymore.
Every pastor I've slept with. Ooh. Every pastor I've ever known is kind of, for lack of a better explanation, outwardly goody-goody. I don't mean that in a bad way. I just don't know any other way to describe it.
How do you say that in a good way?
Having known Roger, the singing, lustful after his woman, dad, soldier, when he was needed, among other ordinary things, I just can't picture him as a pastor. He's very intelligent and obviously capable. I just can't marry the two halves together.
And that was chapter 57. Moving right along. We finished part 7, rolling downhill, and we are moving on to part 8.
His name went downhill? Stop it.
Rolling Downhill was the name of part 7, and we are moving on to part 8.
Oh, I thought you said we finished part 7, and it went downhill.
Nope. Rolling Downhill was the name of part 7.
I mean, don't
seven.
Most chapters go downhill? I mean, they kind of sometimes do.
No.
This one did.
Okay. Moving on to part 8, entitled The Call, with chapter 58, Love One Another.
So Roger is practicing his shouts in the woods so as not to be embarrassed. I mean, is it to be embarrassed later or not to be embarrassed now? Not to be embarrassed now. He hears others. He hears people. He hears what he thinks is humans around there too. And he calls out. What?
He hears what are you laughing? Are humans. I don't know. It was... He's on the earth. What else?
Summer, it could be a bear. I don't know.
He hears what he thinks aliens.
It made me pull a muscle in my back. Stop it. He hears what he thinks is another hunter or some other human. He calls out, and it was Alan Christie and young Ian, both with rifles. They're out hunting deer. And we find out that Roger is to be giving his first sermon soon at the Christie's house.
I'm sure everyone's very excited.
Yeah. We don't know, at least for a sentence or two, if Ian will go, but Bree and Jem will. And then Ian says that he'll go. So Roger had planned to preach for about 40-ish minutes as his voice wouldn't hold out for the typically longer services just yet. And he would lean on Tom Christie for that. Tom Christie, as we know, has no problem talking about faith and the Bible and all that. Then we get to Diana's rundown of how his first preaching went. So I don't just mean the whole scene or the whole chapter. I just mean at least specifically the beginning of it. And I was like, yeah, that right there just set me up for a no-show. There was a fug of bodies.
Is that the fug of bodies? Is that a smell?
I think it's like funk. Yes.
Oof.
It's people who don't have perfume. Who don't bath, who don't shower.
Well, they clearly don't have running water, Brie.
Yes, I know. Get on that, Brie.
Right. It's your fault.
Who don't bathe often and probably don't wash their clothes too often until they, you know, are standing on their own or are, you know, like full of mud or, you know, absolutely dirty. And they don't have a lot of clothing anyway. So the clothing that they do have, they're wearing it a lot. And again, this is no blame. This is how it was. But can you imagine? It's There's a fuck of bodies, understandable, and loads of people for that time in that place. And Jamie and Claire had come. Claire's glass face told him that she found the whole thing amusing. I don't know if that's very kind. How you are, you're there doing your first thing and you're trying to, you're working really hard and you're trying to, you know, be as professional as you can and trying to, I mean, I hate to use the word impress. I'm sure he wants to impress people, but he's there to, he wants to do a good job, right? He wants people to think he did a good job. Understandably.
They know him too well.
I know him That's so like, well.
Was you know what I mean? From, it's like if you go to see your kid at work.
Is that the Mary Magdalene?
No, that's from Chess. I know him so well.
I'm thinking I don't want to. What is that? I don't know how to love him. How did I mix up? I don't know how to love him with I know him so well.
You're crazy.
That's so weird. Chess. See, I never would have pulled that. I pulled the song out. Mm-hmm. I did not pull the association out. So thank you, fellow musical lover. Which one is
it's
appropriate?
It's like you can't probably take neither. Anybody seriously when you go and see them at their work. And you're like, I know you in your personal
right?
life. Right? And this is weird.
Well, why are can you imagine like Brianna? That? Like, yeah. I've seen you naked.
Exactly.
I mean, come on. It's hard. I could not imagine that. That's funny. Roger sees a disturbance going on in the back of the room and ultimately sees a large king snake slither forward into the gathering. Oh, so that's how this is going to be this first time, right? He's like, oh, holy Lord, please save me from there being an issue here. Because these people, as he points out, or as Diana points out, snakes in Scotland are few and far between. Like they're rare. It's rare to see one. They're there, but they're not that common. In the New World, holy monkey ball. Yeah. Like Jamie almost died from one. Granted,
it was
poisonous.
Oh, and then we get another good passage of time that happened 3 years ago.
Oh, gosh.
Because they mentioned it. You know, my father-in-law.
I didn't even know it was three years ago.
I know. His father-in-law almost died 3 years ago. And it gets mentioned in the chapter.
And so even though this one is not venomous, it still freaks Jamie. Heck, I haven't been bitten by one, let alone almost died, and they still freak me the freak out. So I get it. But can you imagine how much more afraid or how much more sensitive, mentally sensitive you would be to seeing one? Is like PTSD right there. So I gotta say though, I don't know how you write. Okay, this is talent. I'm not saying no one else does it, but how awesome is this that Diana writes a snake, the role of a snake with comedy. She makes a snake funny. That cracked me up. So I just love how the snake is being all leisurely, not worried in the least.
Just poking around.
He just comes in like, I'll just sit here for a second. And Roger's like, oh my God, just like, yeah, Roger wants him to turn around. But the thing is, the snake comes out and like goes slowly forward and then pauses. And then turns around a bench or something and goes out the back or toward the back where Jamie picks him up. But the snake has like not a care in the world. And it cracks me up. I mean, I don't know. I guess no one else finds that funny. It cracked me up.
I mean, it eventually has a care in the world when he gets shoved inside of his shirt and then further into a pocket.
Where am I at? Oh, Roger sees that Jamie has seen the snake. And of course, Jamie loves snakes. Mm-hmm. The snake gets bored and turns and heads toward the back row. And see, even that's funny. A snake getting bored? What? That makes me, made me laugh. He turns and heads toward the back row. Jamie bends down and just picks up the snake, as you do, and puts it under his tartan, I believe, under his plaid. Claire has now seen that Jamie has a snake.
I mean, we all knew. We all knew Jamie had a snake. Come on.
Roger sees Claire take out a pocket, open it, pulls the snake by the neck when it darts under Jamie's chin, and scoops it into her pocket and pulls the drawstring closed. Meanwhile,
now, these are like the old school pockets where like you used to tie a pocket under your dress and then you had a hole in your skirt that you could access the pocket.
They literally had more going on, better clothing. And, you know, I know the dresses can be ridiculous. I get that all the layers. But as far as practicality, like it's only gotten worse for us, for women.
Mm-hmm. Shoes get more uncomfortable.
Oh Lord. So the man next to Claire had seen all of this and he's looking at her bug-eyed. That was funny too. So as Roger finishes, people come forward to tell him how well he did, what they liked, what could have been a little bit different, all mm-hmm. that.
And somebody said there weren't enough harlots.
Yes.
This is, I mean, let's be honest. Let's be honest about church. Church is really everyone getting together and having a book study where somebody leads and tells you about a book. Everyone's read the book. So if everyone has the book and everyone knows the book, everyone is remembering their different parts that they like
more. And they have
more.
Their opinions of it. Yeah.
So you imagine coming out from one of these things and being like, you're telling it wrong. You're doing it wrong. Or like if you try to tell a story, a shared story in a group of friends who has heard you tell it before, and then they tell you you're telling it wrong.
That sounds familiar. I know two sisters who have a podcast who talk about a book they like. Mm-hmm. And people have opinions of what we get wrong. Not even here. And actually, it's less so with the books. Although, again, we're not. I stand by this 100%. And my mind cannot be changed. The only Outlander expert or expert in Outlander is Diana. That is it. There are longtime fans or even short time fans who have read everything and who are super passionate and super knowledgeable. You can be, and I'm not putting us up there as having any like certain amount of knowledge, but whatever knowledge we do have, I promise you there are fans, again, short time or long time, who have more knowledge than us. I promise you, because there's always someone who has more. However, there is only one Outlander expert, and that is Diana. So as long as you look at it like that, everyone else, heck, not even everyone else, even Diana makes mistakes, not with her content. Well, okay, that's a different story. She has, time-wise, Drums of Autumn going to find Roger and come back in time, all that. So geography is not her strong suit. There's some time issues. And she even says, she remarks on things, okay? She's up front with that she had made mistakes or hadn't been consistent in a certain way. We're all human. But still, she's the only expert. Anyone else who discusses Outlander, again, even the creatrix of Outlander has made mistakes or misremembered or hasn't remembered something. That's not really a mistake. Not remembering is not a mistake. Misremembering is making a mistake, but it doesn't matter. No one's perfect is my point. So if Diana does that, then how much more likely are we fans who love the work or who read the work? How much more likely are we to make mistakes?
Well, and let's be honest, at this point we're on book six. I know that they are longer and shorter, but if each of these is 1,000 pages of things, that's 6,000 pages of things happening to keep straight in your head at one point in time. It's people are fallible, man, and there's nothing wrong with that.
Oh, no, of course not. So later that night in bed, as they're chatting and Jem is not quite asleep, they're talking. Roger is sharing what some of those people had said or comments, right? And Jem hears a word and asks, "What's a harlot?"
Mm-hmm.
I don't even know what he said. It was funny. And Roger tells Bree he's still sure that he made the right decision, meaning to go to minister school. They discuss a calling or having a calling and what it means to have one. And whether motherhood is one. I think Roger's the one who says, well, isn't motherhood a type of calling? And Bree makes a very good point. While I think absolutely, okay, this is me, not Bree right now. Well, okay, I'll read what Bree says because my thoughts stemmed from that. Bree makes a good point. It is important. No one is denying the importance of it. But she says, and this kind of like pulled the carpet out from under me, right? I'm like, oh God, this is so true. She says, but shouldn't there be a choice in it? If Roger is discerning and has taken time to discern whether or not he is called to be a pastor, a minister, he's given the time and space, or he takes the time and space to think on it. Now, he could have said, you know what, I kind of feel called, but I'm not ready, or I don't want to do this, or whatever it is. But he said yes to it, and he had plenty of time to discern. Brianna makes a very good point that no one denies the importance of motherhood. Like, that's not even on the table for discussion. But she's saying, as far as it being a calling, shouldn't there be a choice in it?
Mm-hmm.
And she wasn't given that choice. Now, I know. One could argue that, sir, I'm trying to see both sides, okay? I'm not talking about abortion. I'm just talking about becoming a mother. I know that you could absolutely argue that by willingly lying with Roger the one time without contraception, but with her, the mother she had, and with full knowledge of what happens, or what could happen, while she may not have chosen to become a mother at that time, and she absolutely didn't think about it, didn't choose it, she certainly knew it was a possibility. No, this is no blaming here. I'm just saying they didn't acknowledge, she didn't acknowledge that part.
He pulled out. They thought they were safe. That was not a choice.
I just said it wasn't a choice. She did not choose to become a mother. Her choice was later on to keep it. That was her choice. That was when she decided to be a mother, because it was, well, for her, but also because there was a chance of it being Roger's. Anyway, I'm not trying to get into that that fray, but I just wanted to kind of nip that in the bud, that she had made a choice to lie with Roger. Absolutely. But I'm not, and yes, she had full knowledge about contraception. It wasn't available right then, and she hadn't planned on, you know, seeing him back in the past, all that. So we know this. You've read the stories, we've talked about it. We know this. But yeah, it's a very good point that, especially for something that is so important, yeah, I don't want to align the choice with its importance, because that's not up for discussion. I think everyone agrees that it's an important role. The question is, shouldn't there be a choice in it? And so that's kind of, I thought it was very good food for thought. And Diana writes some important words. Why this whole discussion, mini discussion on having a choice or not having a choice, right? Because Diana follows up with these words, quote, Jem had been thoroughly an accident, but this one, if there was one, they'd chosen all right, unquote. So we officially get word that they're trying for baby number two. Woohoo!
And he's already judging her boobies and whether or not they're ripe. Lord.
Yes. So Bree at this point still doesn't know what her calling is, but she says she'd always thought she'd have one, but she just doesn't feel that she has found it yet. And then later that night, Roger has a very graphic nightmare. He awakes gasping. The nightmare, however, was not about the hanging, interestingly. It had been a dream about drums like hitting on his bones and breaking his bones. And when he wakes up, we find out it was related to the rescue, his participation in the rescue of Claire after her abduction, and him beating, killing Harley Bauble. And he had not recognized him when he killed him, but he recognized him just now in this dream.
What a fun name.
All right.
Harley Bauble.
And he says, do you remember who that was? Or he says, this person was. Harley Bauble had been the thief taker that they'd run in with at the gathering. Remember when it was Uta and her daughters? They were sitting on him, I believe it was. And it was a whole thing. So Bauble had a lot of, well, he was part of the gang that abducted her. And I don't think Bauble raped her, but he was the one who, I think he wanted to, right? But he came over and he was the one who beat her, I think. And yes, this is him saying this. Yes, it's bad for him. It's bad that he killed someone. He knew someone. Even though, he said it makes it worse. But he says, even though when he killed him, he didn't know who he was. He didn't recognize him. But he says that kind of doesn't matter whether he knew him or not, because he had meant to kill him. So he had full intent to do so. And they go back to sleep.
And that was chapter 58. Join us next week when we will be continuing our A Breath of Snow and Ashes read-along with chapters 59, Froggy Goes A-Courtin', and 60, The Pale Horseman Rides. Horseman, as opposed to horseman.
Again, a special thanks to co-producer Megan P. And just so happened to be our commenter, our lovely commenter. To find out more about how you can support us on Patreon and what a co-producer is, visit outlanderpod.com/Patreon.
And if you'd like to join us to continue the conversation online, you can go to www.outlanderpod.com/group. And if you're interested in seeing any of our Outlander podcast branded merchandise, you can go to www.outlanderpod.com/shop.
And if you haven't joined our text community, why not? It's free. Text HELLO to 916-659-5112. And thank you as always so much for listening. We look forward to our next episode.
Oh my gosh, Ben.
Thank you to our generous partner, Zencastr, who offers high-fidelity podcasting. Check out Zencastr and use coupon code OUTLANDER20, OUTLANDER20, for 20% off 3 months or 20% off for a year. Connect with us. Visit our website at outlanderpod.com. Find us on Facebook, facebook.com/outlanderpod. We'd love for you to join our Facebook community at outlanderpod.com/group. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at outlanderpod.